Lester Crocker was born and raised in the town of Kendrick. As a child and as a man, he hunted and fished many of the watersheds which flow into the Potlatch. On this tape, he talks about hunting and fishing in the early days, about his experiences as a rural route mail carrier on American Ridge, about ice houses, and about many of the great fires which burned in the early days as a rural mail carrier. You were born here in Kendrick, weren't you?
September 1st, 1899, I was born here in Kendrick.
Were you born at your own home, or what?
Born at my own home, yes, I was. And just an old-fashioned country doctor made the delivery. One of the kind that used to have a horse and buggy and all and make calls out in the country. And the roads at that time, of course, were all dirt roads, and when it rained, they were mud, about hub deep. In wintertime, the snow was so deep that they had trouble getting around. Right here in town, I can remember when I was a child, probably, before I was a teenager, I can remember when the snow was foot and a half deep right in our front yard. But things have changed now to where some winters we don't get any snow at all, you know. Mm-hmm. Being a native here, you know that, of course. And in the summertime, the weather, of course, was hot and dry and dusty, and everybody praying for rain, and we'd see a big cloud coming up and begin to rejoice, thinking we were going to get a rainstorm to cool things down a little bit, and first into that the wind would come up, and first thing you know we'd have a dust storm and no rain.
That seems sort of like this year.
Yeah, quite a bit. Quite a bit like this year. Of course, in those days, forest fire was, well, seemed to me much more serious than it is now, because the present day method of fighting fires is so advanced over what it was at that time that they can get on them right away and either put them out or corral them to the point where they can't do too much damage, we hope.
How did they handle fires in the early days?
Well, they had stations around in the forest, you know, ranger stations and smoke chasers, what they call smoke chasers, be on a lookout upon the top of the mountain somewhat like they are today. And of course, the only way of reporting a fire at that time was by phone. Then the only way to get to the farm was by saddle horse and to the fire. I mean, was by saddle horse and pack string to take the equipment and saddle horses to take the men out to the on the farm. Of course, there were lots of big fires where, in a number of cases, there were lives lost, you know, in the fire.
Did you do much firefighting?
I never did do any firefighting on a big fire. Just small fires that we've had here in the canyons right here around close to town. I went out a few times, but the biggest fire we had here was in the 30s. 1930s, early 30s, and we didn't happen to be at home at that time. We were Orfino visiting some friends, and our parents called up and told us not to try to come back over the hill, because the road was right, come right through, that came right through the fire, see. And so we went back down around by Arrow and came back up the canyon. When we got here, well, everything was smoke and fire on both sides of the canyon, except the south hill over here didn't burn, where the timber is, south of town. Both of the Bear Creek Canyons, Little and Big Bear, and the Potlatch Canyon, and the fire ran, and also the area up toward Cameron, I don't know, burned off in that fire.
Was it mostly a ground brush type fire, or what?
It was started by the train up in Little Bear Canyon on the railroad.
That was a logging train, wasn't it? Or was that a...
I don't remember now. I just told it may have been, but I'm not sure. I don't believe it was, because there wasn't much... at that time, there weren't many logs hauled through here. They mostly went to small mills and around in the country, and they hauled logs with heavy horses and sawed them right there, you know, and then the lumber was hauled to town with heavy lumber wagons and 4 and 6 horse teams, you know.
Where did that railroad there in Little Bear run?
I beg your pardon?
Where did the railroad that went up Little Bear, where did it go to?
I mean Little Bear Creek, it's the present road, just as it is right now. Present Northern Pacific Railway.
Hmm.
Right up Little, went right up Little Bear Canyon to Troy, and then on out to Moscow and Spokane, not that far.
Well, you were here then when the 1904 fire hit Kendrick.
I was here, but I was too young to remember anything about it, although I do. It seems to me that I can remember seeing there were some explosions in the fire, and it seems to me that I either remember seeing or remember hearing them tell about the chunks of charred wood and stuff that were flying through the air, you know, from the explosions. Being just a real small child, but I couldn't verify the fact that I actually saw those things.
Well, your house wasn't caught up in that fire, was it?
No, it just went to been a section down down on the flat, down toward north of the town.
What did folks do for a business section after that?
Well, they set up a bunch of tents and tried to go ahead with business, and it was just a short time till they were on the road to building new stores, and instead of the old frame buildings, they built mostly brick buildings, and a good many of those are still standing. For instance, that temple building down there, the Lodge Hall and Temple building, was built in 1912, I believe, or 19, maybe even earlier than that. Now, there's the date is on the front of the building, and I may be confusing that with the first brick school building that was built here, which was built in 1912. Of course, when I started the school in 1907, and the school I went to, of course, was what they call the primary school, and that was down in the far end of town where the saddle clubs have their fenced in area, then known for their gymkhanas and one thing or another. And I picture in here of the inside of that school building, but the picture was taken, I think, in 1904 or 1905, before I started the school. And I can't identify the people on it, the kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, how long did you go to that school?
Just 1 year. Mm-hmm. And then they made other arrangements and did away with that school and made room for them up here on the hill. Mm-hmm. Of course, that was a frame building too. And that building stood right out on the brow of the hill where it breaks off right down over that bluff, you know, over right up here and down over to that bluff out where you can look out and see where the new school is, house is now. And then I went to school there until 1912 when the brick building was built across the street over on the other side there. How long have you been here?
I've been here about 2 years.
Just 2 years. Well, you don't remember the old building then. It was torn down. And the gymnasium building is still up there on the hill. Mm-hmm. And that was sold to the VFW, and they use it for their get-togethers and different functions that they have.
It was a one-room schoolhouse when you attended it?
The primary school down the lower part of town was just a one-room building. I get that picture just to give you an idea. I find it.
When you were a kid, you were pretty interested in fishing and hunting?
Oh, yes. My dad started me out as soon as I was able to walk. For he was always a hunter and a fisherman. And he was very particular about training us to respect the danger of firearms and taught us how to and taught us to never point a gun at anything unless we wanted to kill it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in those days, there was lots more game than there is at the present time, particularly birds and deer, I think as a result of some of the big fires, the elk and deer both increased in some areas because after those fires, the timber, you know, being killed, then the brush comes on. Of course, that's the natural browse for the wild game, for the big game. And they increased till up in the 40s and 50s, while we had more game than ever before. But now, I don't believe there's one animal now to where there were a dozen back there in that period. So when we go hunting in the fall now, it's just a chance whether we get any meat or not.
Was your family pretty dependent on hunting when you were...
Well, not really dependent on them, but then it was a nice thing to be able to have that meat for a family when it was kind of hard to get meat any other way, and it was quite a saving, really, because, equipment to you know, guns and fishing tackle and all that sort of thing. And those days were cheap, and it didn't cost anything like it does now to follow that what shall I call it? That it isn't a habit, and it isn't a business, or it's a pleasure, I guess, a recreation, a form of recreation. At the same time, we were meat hunters and not trophy hunters.
Mm-hmm.
And I myself almost raised our family on wild meat. And that was not like some people that I know of that may have raised their family on wild meat, but they didn't always get that meat legally, but we got it legally.
Was the fishing here better back?
Oh, much better. Fishing was much better in those early years of this century. And at the present time, why, it's almost a thing of the past in this particular area.
Was there more water here then, or what?
Beg pardon?
What has caused the decline? Do you have any idea?
There are a number of things. Of course, I suppose the fishing pressure has something to do with it. But the thing I believe that has contributed to the fact that there is so little fishing anymore in the area is that the headwaters of the streams up where they originate and had mostly all been logged off, and there's nothing to hold back the moisture in the spring or late winter when the snow is going off. Why, it just goes off with a rush, and the streams get high and flood the areas below. And then in the summertime, when it begins to get warm, well, they dry up, and there's just no place for them. They just trout, you know, can't live in warm water. And I think that probably is the main thing that has caused the decline in the fish population. On the other hand, so far as big game is concerned, sometimes that logging helps because they thin out the timber and there's more brush grows there for them to browse on. See? Well, it just, you know, we lose the fish and maybe we gain a little wild game.
Would you used to go out fishing pretty often?
Every chance I got. I always enjoyed fishing, and of course when I was just a youngster growing up, there was no bag limit at all on fish. These streams were alive with little pan fish, you know, small trout. And then in the spring of the year, of course, when the steelhead run was on, actually the trout that we catch out of these streams are just young steelhead, or rather, actually they're ocean-going rainbows, because when they become a certain age, well, they migrate downstream and eventually wind up in the ocean. And then when they're proper age to spawn, well, then they come back up to the place where they were spawned, and of course smaller fish come back too quite a bit. Well, you know, the steelhead is classified as a trout when it's under 20 inches long. Over that, why, it's a steelhead or an ocean-going rainbow. So if you go out fishing and fishing for steelhead and you catch one under 20 inches long, or 20 inches or under, and the trout season is still open, well, you can bag it as a trout.
Mm-hmm.
But over that, might as be a steelhead.
When you fish around here, would you mostly just fish these little feeder creeks that come in to the river, or what?
Well, this Potlatch Creek and all the branches, even the small feeder streams, in those days were alive with small trout. I say they're alive with small trout. They also had larger trout too. Many times I can remember my dad telling about, well, when I was a child, he took my sister and I up in the park area. You know where park is. You know where park is. And there was a road that went down across the Potlatch, and there used to be an old prospect down there, and they called it, I had it right on the tip of my tongue, but I can't think of the name of it. It was a mine. And I can't think what the name of it was now, but anyhow, it never developed because they never found anything worthwhile. But anyhow, this road went down across the Potlatch and came back on the Texas Ridge side. And he took a team and took the family down there, and we camped for 3-4 days. And he told me many times about the fish they caught way up, you know, 17-18 inches trout. Of course, sometimes the year you can't do that because the rainbow is a very extremely migratory fish. They move around a lot. I've seen the time when I go up and catch a nice bag of good sized trout, rainbow trout, maybe everything from 10 inches up to 14, and you lose a lot of them too and think, well, I'll go back next week and maybe have another good basket full, and go back next week and never see one because they've migrated and they've gone downstream, see?
Your father's main occupation was as a blacksmith, wasn't it?
He was a blacksmith, yes. When he came west in 1892, that's my father,
mm-hmm.
In 1892 he came as a carriage maker and carriage painter, and he went to work in a blacksmith shop that was owned by a man by the name of Lester Carmine, Carmine, I believe. And he went to work for him as a carriage maker and repairer of vehicles. And gradually worked into the blacksmithing business, horseshoeing, tire setting, and all that sort of thing. He wasn't a large man, but I've seen him handle horses that would just, you'd get the hind foot up and they'd just lay over on him, and he'd be just carrying about a fourth of that horse while he was shoeing it.
Mm-hmm.
He retired, oh, I think he must have been in his 70s when he retired from the blacksmith shop, and then started a little gun shop at our home down there. And then later, after a few years, his health got so he couldn't do much of anything and gave that up.
Was it pretty hard to continue in the blacksmith trade after After the advent of cars?
No, I didn't quite get the question.
Oh, was it very hard for him to continue in the blacksmith trade after automobiles came in?
Oh, yeah, of course, when automobiles and trucks and all those came into use, why, so many of the heavy horses and also the light driving horses just disappeared, naturally, because people started burning gasoline instead of hay burners. And it kind of fizzled out. But now, in some areas, and there's so many saddle horses, you know, so many saddle clubs, that there's quite a demand for horseshoers. So, things have really changed. And
did you ever work with your dad in the blacksmith shop?
I worked with him some, just in summertime, you know, during vacation from school. I helped him a good deal in wagon work. Tire setting, other repair jobs on. You know, they had breakdowns with wagons like they have breakdowns with cars. Maybe a team would run away and smash things up. There'd have to be some repair work done.
Well, runaways are a pretty common occurrence.
Runaways?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I can remember lots of them. I've been in a couple of them.
When you were driving, or was he also driving?
No, when I was just a youngster, I can remember one of my uncles was in town with a team, and he went into a store and left me in the wagon, and something scared the team, and they took off up the street. What did I tell you? The dust was flying, and I was hanging on. Somebody raced out and got a hold of the bridle reins, and after a little tussle, I got him stopped.
About the, you know, there being more water and everything there, were the seasons also different? I mean, has weather seemed to change very?
Well, mostly the fact that we don't have the snowfall that we used to have. I think we have generally, except for an off year like this, I believe we have as much rainfall, as much moisture over a year, probably as we ever did. But that snowfall in the wintertime makes a lot of difference. If we, you know, if we don't have the snowfall, why what snow we do have goes off of the rush, and it doesn't go into the ground like it should. You have deep snow, why it kind of melts from the top, you know, and goes down, and a lot of that goes into the ground.
When the ground was snowy, you know, when the winter season was on, and the kids didn't have too much to do, I wouldn't think, then. What kind of stuff would they do for entertainment?
When there was snow on?
Well, when the winter was here, yeah.
In those days, when I was a youngster growing up here, I think we spent most of our leisure time, when they weren't in school, in the winter time, coasting and skating. Because the streams froze up, and there were times when you could start down to Lore in the town here and skate clear up this river for several miles, except for some places in where the rapids, where you had to kind of work around, and then be a long still pool there that'd be just wonderful skating below the rapids. We used to do that sometimes, just, you know, just to get up the river a ways. Mm-hmm. And then another thing, they were quite a number of deep pools along right close to town here that froze over in the wintertime. And I know that there were times when the ice would be a foot thick. And during those times, of course, there were, in those days, before the days of refrigerators and freezers and all that sort of thing, why, people made a business of going out and cutting ice and storing it away in what we call ice houses in sawdust, you know, to stack it in there and have sawdust between the tiers and stuff would last all summer, you know. Some in the bottom of the pile would still be there in the fall. And then people would buy ice from people that were in that business and have a cool drink in the hot summer day.
Mm-hmm. Well, when people bought the ice themselves, would they have a little, like a little miniature ice house to keep the ice?
No, they usually had some way to keep it for maybe a day or two, you know, and just get what they needed at the time. Mm-hmm. You could buy just whatever amount you wanted. They just take an ice pick and just cut off what you wanted, you know, and cover the other piece up and leave it there till somebody else came in and wanted some ice. Of course, the only way we could have ice cream in those days in the summertime was to get a big chunk of ice and put it in a gunny sack and pound it up and make crushed ice out of it, and then turn the crank on the freezer, pour the ice around the container and add a little rock salt to it and turn the crank until it began to get so stiff that you couldn't turn it anymore, and then and it was time to start eating ice cream.
Mm-hmm, right. We still do that sometimes. That's, you know, I can't say that that's the only way we eat ice cream, but we do use that way.
But that was a lot better, wasn't it? A lot better than the kind you buy.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you go on the fishing trips or skating trips or hunting trips or whatever, would you go out and camp out for a few days and just make a long trip over, or just
scoot out
for afternoons or what?
We used to, when we went fishing, we'd go out and stay for a few days. In fact, when I was a kid, some of our chums and I would oftentimes take a bicycle and take our bicycles as far as we could ride them out up this creek, and then when we came to a place where the road left the creek and went up on top of the ridge, while we'd cache the bicycles in the brush and then take our packs on our back and hike up the creek a ways and
that's
fix us a lean-to.
Up which creek?
Well, the Potlatch Creek I'm talking about now. Fix us a lean-to and you know, in case of rain or anything, just cut some poles and spread boughs over them to shed the water off if it rained, and then cut some more boughs to put under our beds, and we just have probably just have a blanket and sleep in our clothes.
did you ever have to use like smoke the fish and stuff to bring it back down to use later?
No, when we went up that way, well, we'd just eat what we caught right there. And sometimes later when we went way back and took a team and packed back in, well, we caught more fish than we could use, and we'd take a lot of salt with us when we went, figuring that if we got any, we'd salt them and bring them back. But that never did work out too well for me, because I never did like salt fish. They're not so good anymore after you keep them for a few days, and even if they are salted. In fact, I don't like these trout that we catch now. After they're a day or so old, I don't want them at all. I'd rather have them while they're real fresh, and well, fresh enough that they kind of curl up in the pan when you put them on the stove.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're good.
You told me last time we talked about something about time when you were a rural mail carrier out here.
Oh yes, I carried the mail for about, let's see, 21, about 5 years on American Ridge. That was at that time. That was, they called it route number one. And then there was another route, number two, that went up on the Bear Ridge area, up toward Deary and up that way. But later, after I gave up the mail job, they kind of combined the two. And at the same time, they improved the roads and changed the route so that they could use automobiles the year round. You know, and when I was carrying it, the roads were, some of them were gravel, some of them were still just dirt roads. And the snow got so deep lots of times that I couldn't get around with a team. But now, since they use motorized equipment, why, the highway districts get out there early and plow the roads so they can get around. But in those days, they didn't have that equipment to clean the roads out that way. Of course, it wasn't really that necessary unless the road was completely blocked with too much snow. Well, they used sleds anyhow. The team could wallow through it a few times, while then the road was kind of broken, so you could get over it all right. I did have a few little accidents, and I never had a runaway, but I had a couple of experiences with drifted snow where we had to drive the team up around through somebody's field, because the cut through over a ridge, the cut would be filled up with snow and you couldn't tell where the road was anyhow. And maybe when you try to get back on the road, why, when the horses would slip over the edge and then they'd both be down and the rig halfway tipped over, and I had to get the scoop shovel busy and shovel out a lot of snow before I could get the team or the rig up on the get it righted again so I could go on.
But the whole time you were carrying the mail, you were using a team in the winter?
In the winter time.
Mm-hmm. How about in the times between?
Well, in the summertime, when I put the team out in pasture right close, you know, in some of these close places up here on the bench close to town, so that if I did have need them, well, I could go out and get them. Get up early in the morning and go out and catch my team and bring them in and hook up and go to the post office. And
what would you need them for in the summer?
Pardon?
What would you need them for in the summer?
Well, and if we had a storm and a heavy rain, you know, the road would get so muddy that I couldn't get around with the car. so I'd have to catch the team up.
Did you usually manage to get through most of the time?
My pardon?
Did you usually manage to get through most of the time?
Oh yeah, most of the time. There were a few times that I didn't make it clear around. But within a day or so, I'd be opened up so I could get around.
How was it climbing those ridges during bad weather?
How was
I mean, that was a pretty hard pull climbing those ridges, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. It was then, especially if it was muddy. And of course, if you want to shut this thing off, I'll go and get your picture to